Tonight's lesson, what do you think it's about? Women preachers, prophets, you ready? And hats. There's your title. What on earth could this be about? Hats? Well, let me introduce the lesson by talking about the joy of growing up at West Huntsville. A little congregation, you know, back then, you know, a congregation had 200 members was sometimes was a pretty good-sized congregation back there. And that little congregation, West Huntsville, in my generation, produced 22 preachers. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that remarkable, the congregation that side? It was a different world. Guess what we did not have? We did not have full-time preachers. And so it was just all the time, you know, didn't have hired preachers for that. And I can remember I was about 9 or 10, about probably 9 years of age, whenever we hired our first full-time preachers. It was just different ones that preached. And you should have sat in some of those Bible classes. I am telling you, you know, it was remarkable to sit in those Bible classes because nobody was scholarly. And it was just great to watch them and to be a part of it. And I look back in my memory and just to see West Huntsville try to grow to be a New Testament Church of Christ. Let me illustrate it. My dad became an elder of the church at 27 years of age. How on earth can that happen? Well, it can happen when you don't have good Bible students and you're doing the best you can. They knew there were supposed to be elders in the church, so they had elders in the church. And there was one Sunday that one of the elders stood up and said, well, I'm resigning as an elder this morning, and Austin Jenkins, we're appointing you to be the new elder. He made up his own mind. He made the decision and everything. Was that biblical? Was that scriptural? No. You don't appoint a man whose oldest child, you know, is maybe 6 or 7 years of age. You don't appoint him to be an elder. But they knew they had to have elders, and they just were not deep Bible students. I love sitting in some of those Bible classes, and it was so thrilling. And back then, when folks read 1 Corinthians chapter 11, the verses that's already been read about a woman being covered, you know what they thought it meant? Hats. A woman's got to wear hats. And I remember one of the churches in Birmingham, I only heard about this later, the brother there felt so strong, he ought to have hats, that a woman ought to have hats when she came to the building. He kept a supply of hats on the hat rack that was out in the foyer. And if a sister walked in without a hat, he would say to her, pick you a hat. You cannot worship in this church without a hat. Was he wrong? Yes, he was wrong. But 1 Corinthians chapter 11 is a tough chapter. And growing up in that kind of situation and trying to unravel it and everything, I'm thankful this chapter is in the Bible because it has helped me understand how to study. I want you to understand that. And there's a point we'll make a little bit later. To understand it, you've got to look at every word in the text. And so we're not going to look at the text immediately, those first six verses, right now. But let's talk about the background of those verses that's already been read. And then we're going to come back, and you'll need your Pew Bible likely. You may want to make some notes in it. Because I hope we'll give some information that will really help you understand it. And we're going to look at the first 16 verses in this chapter tonight. But the background is going to take most of it. So don't think, well, he's never ever going to get to 16 verses. Well, I intend to get to 16 verses. Let's talk about the background. What was Corinth like? The most ungodly, immoral city in the first century. If you wanted to talk about the first century concept of whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, they invented a word that whenever a person had become the most immoral, I'm talking about sexually immoral person on earth, he had been Corinthianized. Isn't that remarkable? And so pagan worships there had prostitutes in it, and homosexuality was a part of it. And that's one of the reasons why 1 Corinthians chapter 6 says, you know, that no effeminate or abusers of themselves with mankind. That's the King James Version. And the New King James says homosexuals. You know, they cannot enter the kingdom of God as long as they're doing it. That's a pretty strong verse. Why is that in 1 Corinthians? Because that's what was happening there. And you need to understand that that church started in Acts chapter 18. Paul preached there for 18 months. And when he left, many problems developed. You read 1 Corinthians, you read that first book, and there's a new problem in every chapter, is there not? You remember, I'm of Paul, I'm of Apostle, I'm of Cephas, I'm of Christ. Yeah, that's in chapter 1. You know, what about in chapter 3, whenever it says, because you've divided up into parties, that's not evidence of greater spirituality. That's evidence, you know, of carnality. Sometimes people think, well, I'm so glad we got all these different denominations. And so I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos. That's denominationalism. Well, that's not parallel exactly. But Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, that's a sign not of spirituality, but of carnality. That sits counter to our, you know, you wouldn't know that. That verse wouldn't need to be in the Bible in that kind of setting unless you've got that kind of situation. And so when you get to 1 Corinthians chapter 11, you've got this passage that looks at this matter of women praying and prophesying uncovered or covered, whatever that might be. And so the focus tonight is going to be on the problem that some women created in the church. Now, I preached long enough, and I know this sounds chauvinistic when I say this, but when women start a problem in the church, it's no small matter. They won't turn it loose. You understand that? I mean, that's not chauvinistic. That's just realism, you know. You get a squabble, get two sisters in the church, and if one of them doesn't like the other or something. Now, men can do it, but men sort of get over it after a while. But sometimes women do not. And that, I hope you don't think that's chauvinistic. But when you've got women of the church doing what's happening in Corinth, what was happening? Well, we'll notice in chapter 14, they were speaking up and disrupting the assembly. You know, and how on earth can that be? You understand that in Judaism, there was this meekness of spirit that was a part of the synagogue and everything, but that's not the way it was in that Gentile church there in Corinth. They've got women because there were so many prophetesses. You know, in paganism, I mean, the city was filled with paganism, and so you bring people into the church, and they've had prophetesses, and let's put that expression, women preacher, to understand what it's like. That's what they've grown up believing. You get to Corinth, would you have that same problem? You really just might. And so tonight we're going to talk about the things that were happening there because 1 Corinthians 11 is talking about the matter, it's the women who were praying or prophesying uncovered, whatever that means. And so let's take time to look at it, look at all of those verses. And it's vital that we understand the culture of Corinth. You've got to understand, when they got this letter, they knew exactly what Paul was talking about. Isn't that amazing? We struggle with it, but if you'd lived in Corinth, you'd been a part of that church, you'd know everything's going on there. Our problem is because of our lack of understanding of life in Corinth and lifestyles that were there. When we read this, you know, at West Huntsville, you can decide that's talking about a woman ought to wear hats. Now, I know there are women in the church today who still genuinely believe they need to wear hats. When I came to Palm Beach Lakes, 40 years ago, there were several women of the church who conscientiously believed that. And I don't mock their faith. I mean, I appreciate the fact that they have a feeling well enough. And I can remember a time way back yonder when some of them kept in their purse a little thing crocheted together. Is crochet the word I'm talking about? If I say doily, that's crocheted. You understand what I'm talking about? And during the Lord's Supper, they would put it on their head because they thought the woman ought to be covered when she's eating the Lord's Supper. Well, you know, I respect them for that. But that's why it's important for us to learn what this is all about. And to try to take all of us tonight in what might appear to be a deeper aspect of this, because you see, the culture did not have to be explained to Corinth. That's our problem. But it's our ignorance of what was happening that makes this single passage difficult for us. I believe you can go to slide 3 if you'd want to there. I think that's what I'm sort of trying to talk about. I hope I've got these in the right order back there. But we must understand pagan practices and the use of veils. Women don't wear veils in our day. And if we don't understand it, we struggle with it. And the implication of veils and what it meant and signified. And then he talks about a woman being shorn or shaven. And I remember, you know, way back there, women thought it sinful to cut your hair. Can you remember that? I mean, can you remember when women would not cut their hairs? They just never would. And so their hair would just come, you know, halfway down their back. Very, very common in that. Why? Her hair's given to her for, you know, hair's been given to her by God, and it's a shame for a man to have a long hair, but if a woman has long hair, it's to her glory. And so I can remember back in a time whenever people studied this, they made some decisions about it. And some of you can remember some of those days here in this practice. But we need to understand the matter of some of these terms. The veil was a symbol of authority, a sign of authority. That's in verse 10. We'll hopefully a little bit later, if we can get this projector thing to start working, we'll put all of these verses up on the screen. But open your pew Bible and look there in chapter 10, chapter 11. It was a sign of authority. Well, what kind of authority? She ought to have a symbol of authority on her head. And I remember some of the women that West Thompson, some of them were kinfolks, and I thought they were good Bible studies. And they said, well, here's my symbol of authority, and pointed to their ring. Well, okay. And what it meant was, I'm under the authority of my husband, and that's the symbol of it. And I'm not sure if that's what signified it. But Paul is talking about something on her head. Folks in Corinth would get that just like that. And because we don't understand the Corinthian world, the use of veils we would not understand. Well, what about those who did not wear veils? Hello? What about those who did not wear veils? You need to listen carefully. If a woman did not wear veils, it was a symbol and an advertisement that she might be a temple prostitute. That's amazing. And so you've got to understand that whenever a woman shaved her, or had, when a woman's head was shaved, or whenever she just took that veil off, that symbol of authority, when she took it off, she was looking like a prostitute. I can remember as a young preacher struggling about all of this. I mean, really, really deeply struggling, because I thought, I've known a lot of Christian women, and I've never known a Christian woman to come to servings, worship God, looking like a prostitute. And how on earth could this be? How on earth could this be a problem in the church at Corinth, that Christian women in this church at Corinth wanted to look like prostitutes? And I struggled with it until I read one statement. It's in Barnes' commentary. You know how old Barnes' commentary is? It's so old nobody ever reads Barnes' commentary anymore. And there's a statement, and I'll mention that from Barnes a little bit later, that all of a sudden just laid every bit of this out. And I had studied for years thinking this is probably one of the most difficult passages in the Scriptures. Now the other one was, if a woman was caught committing adultery. Sometimes they would shave her head. We do not exactly parallel that in our day. But is it in Ireland where you've got the northern folks in Ireland fighting against the folks in the southern part of Ireland? And, you know, they've got their armies against each other. One of them wants to be pro-British, and I think the other wants to be pro-Irish. I don't know a lot about Irish history, and some of you folks from England will understand this a whole lot better than I do. But if one of the young women fraternizes one of the soldiers from the other side, she is immediately taken and they shave her head. Why? Because you've shamed our side, and we want everybody to know that no woman in the north or no woman in the south, you know, fraternizes with the soldiers from the other side. And they'd shave their head. And then sometimes, as a matter of beauty, they would shave their heads. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to all of this. But the slide says, and I'm sorry we don't have those, we must understand pagan practices, the use of veils, the implication of veils, and being shorn or shaven, and understand about pagan prophetesses. Let's look at it a little bit different. Look at the next slide, if there were a next slide. The Corinthians understood what the word covered mean. It didn't mean hat. It didn't mean dolly, you know, something that was crocheted or something. It is a form of the Greek word veil. And some translations, and sort of mark this down, every time you run across the word covered in other translations, will rightly put the word veil. Now that's what they'd understand. A woman that was uncovered is a woman who had the veil taken off of her. Over the book of Deuteronomy, when that woman had been accused of being unfaithful to her husband, she was taken and publicly they uncovered her head. Why? Because she might have been unfaithful to her husband. That's a Jewish practice. But in Corinth, I'm telling you, it was an amazing thing. But if you will read this covered and uncovered, if in your mind you will read it with a Corinthian mind and understand, that's what they would understand. A woman that's uncovered, what's that mean? Doesn't mean she's taking her clothes off. It means she's taking her veil off. A woman that is covered doesn't mean she has her clothes on. It means she has a veil on. And that's the way they'd get it. Our problem is we read it, and in our ignorance we can say, well, it must be talking about hats. Well, we were wrong. And you cannot take first century culture, or take 21st century culture, and bring it back to the first century and try to think they were talking about the same thing in the first century when the Bible was written that applied in the 20th or the 21st century. Woman had her head covered with a hat. Yep, they did in the 21st century. But that's not what they had when they talked about being covered and uncovered. They were talking about having a veil on or not having a veil on. Now, the principles of this chapter, let's talk about this. The principles of this chapter extend beyond the culture. In this chapter, we're going to notice the distinguished difference between a man wearing what a woman would wear and a woman wearing what a man would wear. A man was unveiled. But if a man took a veil on, wonder how he would be looked at. Isn't that something? Let me tell you a story. I read this on Facebook. I think it is powerful. Mary and John had a son, and they named him Robert. They loved him so very much. Little boy, he was just the joy of their life. But as he grew up, all of a sudden, even in the public school situation, He learned that he may not be Robert at all. He may have the plumbing, to use words you'll understand, to be a little boy, but inside, he may be somebody else. And he grew up in that culture. That's part of entertainment, part of movies, isn't it? Part of television programs, isn't it? Part of the Olympics almost, isn't it? Isn't that amazing? So all of a sudden, you know, he's early teens. He decides, I'll no longer be Robert, I'll be Roberta. And so Robert is no longer Robert, he's Roberta. And he keeps growing up and he meets somebody. He meets a companion who sort of shares his lifestyle. And so he or she, whatever he is, whether he's Robert or Roberta, he finds another Robert or Roberta, and they sort of live happily ever after. Put that in quotation marks, happily. And then he dies. Roberta dies. And Roberta is buried. Guess what? Roberta is buried, but Robert is the one who survives. And on the day of judgment, he will not be judged as being Roberta. He'll be judged as being Robert. I think that's powerful. And they had that problem in Corinth. They had every sort of immorality. And so we need to understand that the role of women is not tied to culture. It's greater than that. Let me see if I can show that. Because whenever Paul begins to regulate this, he goes back to the creation. Paul writes in here, and then in 1 Timothy chapter 2, and we'll look at that also. And here, he goes back to the creation. Is there a difference in men and women in the creation? And so he says, wait a minute. There's a difference between a man and a woman because God created man, and then the woman was created. And the Bible, in this very passage we're going to look at, is going to talk about the very thing. But he's not talking about Corinthian culture. He's talking about the difference God made between men and women. And when men or women fail to recognize that difference, then you got some real problems. And that's part of the problem in Corinth. It's not a part of culture. And then we'll look in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, where he talks about women are to keep silence in the church. Guess what? That's not tied to. It's not tied to culture. It's not tied to culture. In the Greek culture, women were oftentimes more prominent or as prominent as the men. Isn't that amazing? Now, in Jewish culture, yeah, but Corinth is not Jewish culture. You read the book of Acts, Paul's in Athens, and guess what? And some of the notable women became followers of Paul in Acts chapter 17. Isn't that remarkable? They were prominent in the Greek culture. And so whenever it says, let your women keep silence in the church, guess what they had in pagan worship? Prophetesses. And when you get to Corinth, it says, let your women keep silence in the church. He is anti-culture. And then he says, 1 Corinthians 14, he says in verse 37, what I write unto you about this matter of women keeping silence in the church, if you are spiritual, acknowledge that what I write, this is the commandments of God. And so when you read 1 Corinthians 14, let your women keep silence in the church, it's not permitted unto them to speak. That's a problem in Corinth. Why? Because the women in Corinth had not kept in the place that God put them, not culturally, but as a matter of creation. We may have time to look deeper at those verses a little bit later. And then let me point out, before we ever get to the text, the importance of looking at every word in this. I wish folks at West Huntsville had done that. I would have not had such a deep time trying to study my way out of where I grew up. But I know how to look at every word. And you ought to thank God for David, and the way David talks about the Greek word here says this. The Greek tense says this. Because he's looking at every word and the importance of every word. And so we'll spend just a minute looking at, trying to look at the important words that are tied to the events in Corinth. And then I need to make one other point, and that is 1 Corinthians chapter 11 is not talking about a woman in worship. The brother in Birmingham who kept the hats, women putting hats on was in a matter of worship. Isn't that right? Praying or prophesying, isn't that what it says? You're uncovered and you're praying or prophesying. Isn't that worship? Yes. Guess what the women in Corinth were not allowed to do? In worship, it's a shame for a woman to speak in worship. So we got to understand, there were women prophetesses in the church, but not in the worship. Why? Look at 1 Corinthians 14. Look over there for just a moment, and let's just spend just a very brief time looking at it so you can understand. There were prophetesses in the New Testament church. The Lord said, I'll pour out my spirit upon your young men and on your maidens, and they will prophesy. There were women in the prophetesses in the church, but they did not prophesy in the assembly. Look what he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Look in verse 34. Let your women keep silence in the church, for it's not permitted unto them to speak. They are to be submissive, as also the law says. If they want to learn something, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is shameful for a woman to speak in the church. I don't know what translation you've got, in the assembly. Wait a minute, who said that? Is that some male chauvinist? No, that's what God said. It's a shame for a woman to speak in the church. Now, there's a reason for it, and we'll talk about that in a little bit later. But then he says, look down in verse 37, if anyone thinks himself to be spiritual, got greater insight, be interesting to see some of the women prophetesses televangelists in our day, get them to discuss them. I would love to hear their discussion of this, wouldn't you? I'm talking about looking at what the text says, not what, well, this is what it means. I don't need you to tell me what it means. You tell me what it says. I think I can figure out what it means. It's a shame for women to speak in the church, but I've got more spiritual insight, and God's told me else of this. He says, if you're spiritual, acknowledge that what I write unto you is not cultural. It is the commandments of God. What's the commandments of God? It's a shame for women to speak in the church. And if you've got, religious friends who have women preachers and everything, the pastor's wife's going to preach today and that type of thing, let them read that verse. And instead of you arguing with them, just say, man, that just sounds so good. Have you ever looked at 1 Corinthians 14? Would you explain to me the meaning, it is shameful for a woman to speak in the church, and this is the commandment of God. I don't care what Joyce Meyer says. I really don't care. I want to know what Jehovah God says. And Jehovah God says, they're not permitted to speak. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 2. And look at that passage, and because it's parallel, at least in thought, whenever it says, I desire therefore that men pray everywhere. That's in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 8. And then he says, everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. In like manner also, women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but that which is proper for a woman professing godliness with good works. Let a woman learn in silence with all subjection. And I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over the man. Why? Is that chauvinistic? No. It's creationistic. There's you a good word. I just made it up. What does the next verse say? For Adam was first formed. God, why do you make these rules? Because Adam was first formed. And then he says, and Adam was not deceived. Eve was. And as a result of that, God has put a reminder on this earth that is reflected in the government of the church. That's why you cannot have women elders. You cannot have women pastors, because in the Bible, the word pastor is the word for elder, or it's another word for those who are elders. And you know the qualification to be an elder? Should be the husband of one wife. In God's thing, I don't know how you become a husband of one wife if you're a woman. You understand? And so you can't have women pastors. But let's get back to 1 Corinthians 11 and briefly go through the things that are found in this. Paul said, back in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, imitate me like I imitate Jesus. And then he says, I praise you, brethren, verse 2, because you remember me in all things and keep the traditions exactly like I delivered them to you. He was so thankful that the church had been steadfast. But he says, here's something you might have overlooked. I want you to understand that the head of every man is Christ. And then he says, and the head of woman is man. Why? Because of creation. Because of the one that was tempted, the one that was not tempted. And the head of Christ is God. Here it is. There's God, there's Christ, there's man, there's woman. What's the difference between men and women? Don't you know women are smarter than men? Yep. I've known many wives that were smarter than their husbands, haven't you? Now, husband, be a good time for you to nod your head. Yes, understand that. Oh, yes, but isn't that true? Women sometimes are better Bible students than men are. But that has nothing at all to do with it. It says, go back to the creation, and as the consequences of sin coming in the world, it's impacted how God organized the church as a reminder. And then he said, I do not permit a woman to teach to have authority over the man. If you've got deaconesses in the church and they have an authority over the men, you don't have a New Testament church. You need to understand that men have taken Bible terms and just redefined them in new ways. And in our culture, the words are used. Well, are women pastors? I know a lot of them. You don't know a women pastor in the Bible. Isn't that amazing? And so he says, I thank God that this. But he said, let me give you some background. Here's a pecking order. God, Christ, man, and then woman. And then he says, every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered. You want to be a Corinthian? What would you think about, you know, David getting up here and preaching in a dress? Isn't that amazing? Absolutely disrespectful to the role God gave to him. And then he says, but every woman who prays or prophesied with her head uncovered dishonors her head, for that is the same as if she were shaved. Wait a minute. who was shaved. Women taken in adultery. And he says, when that woman has been taken in a, well, has become prostitute and has therefore had her head shaved, she has left the role that God gave her, God, Christ, man, and woman. And whenever she leaves that role in relationship to that veil was a sign of authority. That's what verse 10 says. Whose authority? It showed in Corinth that she was submissive to her husband and submissive to all men. Can we talk about the world in which we live and Muslim women in our culture? How often do you see in West Palm Beach, Florida, Muslim women walking around, you know, with the garment of the Muslims? Why do they do that? If you'd go to Iran and Iraq, you'd fully understand it. You know, Western women go over into that land, really have problems trying to decide just how they ought to dress, because if they don't have that symbol of that particular dress, she's something's wrong with that woman. And I don't, if I say she's out of her place, I don't mean that as, I hope you know how much respect and love I have for women. I want you to understand that. But she's out of her place. Why? Because that dress symbolizes something in that situation. And so he says to Corinth, the woman praying or prophesying with her head uncovered dishonors her head, it's the same as if she were shaven. Who's the shaven woman? A woman who has left her place. I don't mean that chauvinistic. She's violated the very place God gave her to have in our society. She's out using her body for someone other than her husband. And she's shaved. But that was true of the veil itself. A woman that appeared in Muslim society and in a greater way in the Corinthian society without of a veil was announcing, guess what? I am available. It said exactly the same thing as she'd been shaved. Wait a minute. She's praying or prophesying. What does that mean? Here's the key. Here's Barnes. Pagan prophetesses prophesied without the veil. What'd they do? Well, the Oracle of Delphi, there's a long description of how this pagan prophetess that was there, she was the oracle of Delphi. Delphi was an area. And she would go into a cave. And everything was a thermal area because there'd be smoke coming out of that cave. And when she went in that cave, God gave her a message. And she came out, stood on the up in a very public place and removed her veil and said, "This is what God said." Not Jehovah God, but I've been in the presence of God, and because I've been in the presence of God, I want you to know I'm speaking for God. Now, if that's pagan culture, what about the woman who was given a message from God in the New Testament church? What would she naturally do? When inspired by the Holy Spirit, she had a message that was to be given. And she removed the veil. And he says, "You know what you're doing? You're not supposed to do that. That's a sign of authority. And when you take that veil off. You are saying the same thing. Not that you are a prostitute, but he says, you don't have a right to take. You must have your veil on when you are prophesying. Why? Because it showed the relationship of all of these things. And that's the way that was shown in Corinth. And that's the way they would understand it. And so he says, but if a woman's not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. Circle the word if. If it's shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaven in our culture, let her be covered. But a woman having short hair, one who has been shorn, you've got to understand that doesn't announce anything to us. And yet the very basis that Paul binds the wearing of that veil, and you've got to understand this, is because in Corinth it was a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven. And therefore, she must wear the veil. Why? Because without the veil, you're signifying the same thing that you would signify if you were shorn or shaven. But if that, put a plus or minus there. What if that's not the situation? In 2024, is it a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven? Not in our society. Isn't that amazing? Then the binding of the veil is tied to the if it is a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven. Verse 7, a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is the image of the glory of God. Don't you dress like a woman. Don't you put a veil on, because you stand before God unashamed. You're not having a veil on. And so he says, he's the image of God. And he, by not wearing the veil, shows he understands where he is in this order. And he's bringing glory to Christ. But if a woman takes the veil off, whenever he says, in just a moment, but the woman is the glory of the man. A woman who has that meek and quiet spirit is an honor to her husband and to the men in whose presence she finds herself. But he says, the reason a man cannot wear the veil is, verse 8, man is not from the woman. The woman is from the man. What's that talking about? What was Eve made out of? Where did Eve come from? God created men first. Secondly, he created the woman, and she came from the man. Nor was man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. And somebody says, that's the most chauvinistic thing I've ever heard. But then he flips this thing totally upside down in the next verse, and he says, whenever he says in verse 11, neither is man independent of the woman, nor the woman independent of the man. As a woman came from the man, so the man also comes through the woman. Where'd he come that? You came from your mama, didn't you? And so he says, you're not out here the most powerful person on earth, and a woman is meaningless. You came through the woman. And this matter of subjection, and get this, has nothing to do with self-worth. That's why when you read these things, somebody says, sounds chauvinistic. Why? Because it appears like you're saying, well, they're not as good as. No, it has nothing at all to do with as good as being as smart as, anything at all. All it has to do is what happened when God created the world and put Adam and Eve in it and made woman out of the side of Adam. And so he says in verse 11, for this reason. What reason? For this reason, a woman ought to have the sign of authority on her head so that she can show that she is submissive. It's a sign of the authority of the men in her life. And then again he says, judge in yourself. Is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? You make that judgment. He said that to Corinth. How would they make this judgment? Yeah. If she took that veil off when she was praying to God, it was absolutely wrong because it announced more than she was being a prophetess. It announced that she could have been a loose woman. And then it says, does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it's a dishonor to him? What does that mean? Nature is a matter of long practice. When the Bible says you were by nature the children of wrath. Is that Mother Nature? No, that's not Mother Nature. You grow up in a pagan world and you grow up in Sodom and Gomorrah and tell me what attitude you'd have toward homosexuality. Isn't that amazing? And so he says, nature has given long hair to a man. It's given to her, it says, but if a woman have a long cord, it's a glory to her, for her hair is given to her for a covering. And let me point out, this word covering here is not the word veil. Society, almost every society that I'm aware of, women have longer hair and men do not. And that's the way it was in Corinth. I know men's hair was longer, you know, than the folks in the military in our day. But you can look at the statues that they had and tell if a man's a man or a woman. Just look at those ancient Grecian statues and you'll see every bit of that. Because a man's hair was shorter in that culture. Anyway. And so Paul said, you make that judgment. Is it proper? Why? Because if she's uncovered, she's signifying something. But that something it signifies is based on what was happening in Corinth. This passage is not written primarily to the folks in the 21st century. It's written to those in the first century. And you make up your mind about it. And it goes to human wisdom. He's saying, doesn't it just make common sense that if a woman prays uncovered, it's a dishonor? That it's shameful? Yes. Every time you saw a woman without a veil, that's what you thought. But if it has long hair, it's a glory to her. And then he says, wait a minute, Corinth. Let me tell you, I'm talking about a Corinthian problem. If you want to be contentious about this, the problem that you have there is not a problem that is had in any other church. And when he says, if anyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, nor do the churches of God. Isn't that amazing? He says, you got a problem in Corinth. I want you to know, they're not having this problem worldwide. Jewish churches would not have it, and in other places they would not have it. Corinth is unique because they had women who wanted to speak in the church, and they're not allowed to do it, and that's a part of what was happening in Corinth. And those women, with that same mindset, thought, then I need to be able to prophesy just like a man, and I'm taking my veil off. No, you're not. Why? Because it signifies more than that you're being a prophet. It signifies you're a loose woman. I thank you so much for the way you've listened tonight, and I apologize for going over a little bit, but you were listening too well, and I couldn't find a stopping place. Okay, thank you very much for listening, being patient, and studying a difficult passage. But you read this with a Corinthian mind instead of a West Huntsville mind where the thought hats or crocheted doilies would satisfy. Doesn't fit. And you need to understand that it's a Corinthian problem, and it was not a problem in any other place. It's a Corinthian problem. Keep that in mind. Let's sing this song of invitation. You may have been thinking about becoming a Christian. God's plan is for you to believe in Jesus, to turn away, that's to repent, to confess your faith in Jesus, and then to be baptized before you have your sins.